Coming up in This Week in Computer Hardware, new SSDs from Intel. The Odroid C2 is faster than the Pi. PC Burr's $2,500 VR build. Should you stick with the $900 version instead? A $5,000 gaming projector and EVGA's first gaming laptop. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 357, recorded March 31st, 2016. The ultimate VR build plays pinball?
This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by iFixit, introducing the all-new ProTech Toolkit to give you the compact and complete toolkit for all things DIY. For $5 off your purchase of $10 or more, go to ifixit.com/twit and enter the code TWITCH at checkout. And by IT Pro TV. IT Pro TV is an easy, entertaining approach to online IT training. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/twitch and use the code TWITCH30.
Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you really mellow news about hardware, mostly desktops and gaming. VR is a big thing for us right now. I'm obsessed with Raspberry Pis and Odroids, but it probably won't be the most delightful, most charming, most engaging, most enthusiastic, and most useful information. We're just going to say it's really mellow this week.
Okay. Yeah.
Ryan, you've been upset with me over promising the bountiful delights of our podcasting hours.
Over-promise, under-deliver is not what I like to do. I like to under-promise and under-deliver. Therefore, everybody's expectations are equally met across the board. Mine, the audiences, however.
Your marriage, man.
Well, I under-promised, and I'll let her decide on the delivery, right? So, you know, whatever. It's okay.
Your great personal effort, I just managed to keep from spitting coffee into my headset microphone, which makes me very happy. I don't make these anymore. Oh my goodness. Welcome to This Week in Computer Hardware. Build was this week from Microsoft. Not a huge amount of news. Developers kits were released for their augmented reality gaming system. The Oculus Rift has shipped. And if you want to see some charming and engaging information about the Oculus Rift, a man bemused, delighted, and occasionally horrified, you should go to PCPro.com, Ryan's homepage, and see his coverage on that. One of the coolest things I've seen so far, actually, is virtual pinball.
I haven't gotten to try that yet. I have a Rift sitting on the floor over here next to me, and I haven't tried virtual pinball yet.
You haven't tried virtual pinball?
It both sounds really interesting and kind of dumb. I don't know. Like, I saw that Tested had built like a box with which to emulate part of a pinball table so that you had something to lean against, something for your hands to actually rest on. And that to me seems like the ideal situation, the ideal scenario to play it. But it's obviously not very many people are going to build that project in order to play VR pinball. Saving some space, but not all of the space.
If you haven't, well, it's interesting because Jeremy Williams, who I get to spend some time with at the Tested offices or on the Tested podcast once in a while, he's like, "OMG, it's so good!" I just posted a link to the tweet. I don't know if we can pull it up. OMG, it's so good! VR pinball controller PinSim is a huge success. Analog plunger coming next. Thanks at Oculus at Zen Studios. It is pretty crazy when you take a look at what he's built there, because it's like the back. If you can close it on that shot, if you click on the device, it's basically about 12 inches of a pinball machine that he's put together. And if you click on the picture, it'll bring it up larger. And there's the actual, you know, and if you click on the next picture, click on the arrow and you'll get a view. That's how deep it is. He apparently is utterly amazed and delighted by it. So it's pretty cool to,
And it doubles. It looks like it's got a joystick on it as well. So maybe we'll double up for other arcade games and stuff, for VR based systems, right?
Yes. That would appear to be. Next time I see Mr. Williams, I will ask. That's pretty cool, though. It looks like they were playing it on in the tested offices in a review. So he's pretty stoked about that one.
Did he mention anything about how much that cost, like that project cost to build?
You know what? I will tweet him right now and see if I get an answer.
Cool. I am curious. Not that I'm going to build one and have it at the office, but just out of curiosity, how much would that cost? Minus this talent and skill to get it done, but just pure resources and that type of thing. So, speaking of, go ahead.
Well, I was laughing because I was thinking, like, you know, as you're talking about, like, the expense, the time, the difficulty, and we have the $2,500 cost is no object VR build from PC Per. So going from a 970 to a 980 is a healthy jump in performance, especially on taxing games, because the frame rate doesn't drop. The 970 is the entry-level card. GTX 970 is the entry-level card for VR gaming at this point. Going to the 980, if you can swing the cash, is a really good idea because you're going to have fewer issues, you know, with the game slowing down when all things go crazy.
Sure.
Is SLI an option for the Oculus Rift at this point?
Probably not. So there's still a lot of questions about multi-GPU with VR. It's going to work very differently. So there's an analog to what you get moving to DirectX 12 with multi-GPU versus what you're getting with VR multi-GPU. Even though VR can run DX11 games or whatever, the way the GPU processing is handled is different. So the GPU is actually giving frames rendered like before the Oculus SDK type of thing, and then the Oculus SDK actually has the final say on what the frame looks like, if it's skewed, if it's shifted at all or time warped at all, and that's actually what gets put out to the head mounted display. So SLI will have to be implemented more on the game developer level as opposed to the driver level, which is what we're used to. So with that in mind, I would say investing in a multi-GPU system today is probably not ideal. It may turn out to be a good investment, you know, maybe like later half of this year, as if there's a way for developers to easily do that. But right now, I wouldn't buy into that necessarily.
Okay. So keep it to a single card. Spend as much money as you can afford. What's the difference? Because we're looking at my favorite... let me scroll up to the actual right article instead of the $1,500 article. We're looking at Core i7-5930K. That's a $527 CPU, an ASUS X99, a USB 3.1 motherboard, 16 gigs of DDR4 3000, because overclocking, GeForce GTX 980 Ti Strix, 512 gigabyte Samsung 950 Pro and a Samsung Red 4 terabyte. You know, personally, I think if you wanted to go for this is the $2,500 machine. If you want to spend all the money, I would say get like several terabytes of SSDs, just to really speed things up because everybody wants games to load faster. HX 750i Platinum power supply, H100i V2 cooler, a carbide 600C case. Total is $2,519. You know, you've got more processor. Are you really getting that much more performance given that you have the same GPU on the $2,500 system?
This is a 980 Ti. The $1,500 one was a 980. So my
apologies. I missed the Ti on that.
Yep. Getting probably 20 to 25% performance boost on the GPU side of things, with that increase. So that, I mean, it should be fairly sizable. And you're saying, you know, if you want to spend a lot more money, there's plenty of ways to spend more money. We were kind of looking for a let's spend money but not be like stupid crazy with it. This is kind of what we came up with. I think the 980 Ti is the fastest single GPU you can buy today. It will get you well into VR. Right. There's always the argument of, hey, there's more stuff coming down the pipeline later. And that's always the case. That's definitely true in 2016. But if you wanted a really good experience today, the 980 Ti is going to get you the best you can get. Now, there is an argument to be made that because games are kind of built to target the GTX 970, that the additional benefit you get of a 980 or even a 980 Ti is kind of reduced because a lot of VR games don't have image quality settings for you to adjust and play with. You know, like Eve Valkyrie does, but Chronos does not, right? For example, where they are kind of setting a baseline specifications and image quality and those types of things, or they're setting baseline quality based on that minimum specification, and they're not giving you any flexibility to go up. So in some cases, having a 980 Ti gets you no discernible advantage over a 970 in VR games. In some cases, there are. Eve Valkyrie is one of those instances where you can tell a difference in image quality between the 970 and the 980. It auto-detects differently. It's going to give you different quality settings because of it. There's an argument to be made that if you look at that Steam VR test, one of the things that Steam VR is really pushing is kind of a dynamic adaptive fidelity where the quality, it's always like the goal is to always hit 90 FPS. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see like a line graph that is basically straight across here where it says very high. And the goal is to maintain 90, and sometimes what it will do is it will reduce the quality of the image in order to maintain a specific frame rate in the game. And what we don't know yet is how many games are actually going to implement that technology. Is that a Steam VR specific API where something really easy for them to do, or is it going to have to be done game by game? If it's easy for them to do and all VR games on Vive do that, then that's another compelling reason to have a 980 Ti. You're always going to get the maximum quality out of that game, and the game developer doesn't have to worry about like tweaking certain things to maintain performance levels. But we don't know that. That Steam VR will be out, I think, April 5th is when those first start arriving at the first pre-orderers' homes, if you will. And I'm still desperately trying to get a hold of the right people to ask these very specific questions of, so I can get results and answers that are compelling to people.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The adventure continues, I think, would be the simplest thing to say at this point.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, obviously, you built all the machines. If it was your money, would you spend the extra grand? I mean, because it seems like, you know, the 980 Ti is certainly a, you know, 20-30% boost over the 980 Ti, like a 20% boost over the 980. The 980 is, you said, like a 30% boost in performance over the 970 for VR?
It's probably, yeah, it's around that. I'd say another 20% or so. Yeah. If it were my money and I didn't have, like, the hard part for us is, like, I can have access to this hardware whenever. If I were building a system, so let me put it this way. If my best friend came to me and he said, hey, I'm going to build a system for VR today, what would I tell him to build? Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would probably tell him to build the $900 system. I would tell him to build the $900 system and plan to upgrade that GPU in the second half of 2016.
Right.
Because we'll have Polaris, we'll have Pascal in some form. I don't know what form yet that we'll have it. But by, you know, beginning of holiday season this year, we'll have all new GPUs. And in theory, if the trend continues, you'll be able to get more GPU power for your dollar. And it may have more specific tweaks for VR in it specifically. And knowing that we have built that $900 system and we believe that it gives you a very, very good experience on all of the current shipping VR games on the Rift and on the Vive Pre, I'm comfortable saying this rig will give you not just an acceptable or an okay, but an excellent VR gaming experience. If I thought that was going to be sacrificed at all, I would probably tell people to go up to the 1500. But because I don't really think it is, then staying back at the $900 is probably where I would go. You know, then if you know you're going to upgrade it, you know you want a bigger SSD already, go ahead and spend the money on the bigger SSD. Sure. If you know you want the faster processor, you know, buy the extra processor. but for the GPU, I would probably recommend staying towards that min spec, that min recommended spec. If you don't have enough money to go, oh, well, I'll buy a $500 GPU now, and if I buy another one in October, that's fine. Which, you know, there are plenty of people that do that. But if you're not one of those people, that's what I would kind of recommend.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Speaking of SSDs and upgrades and hardware and fun stuff like that, Intel announced a big old lineup of SSDs. You're looking at the Hard OCP's write-up for it. Alan will have a write-up late tonight up on PCPer.com. That's assuming I don't steal him for a donut run, in which case it'll be very, very late tonight that gets posted. But the DCP3320 and the 3520, which are essentially 3D NAND technology, super dense, kind of ridiculously efficient storage. You know, they say NVMe performance to the mainstream. When they say mainstream, they're talking about people who are running servers or server farms or giant databases and stuff like that. The 3700 and 3600 series, dual port PCIe SSDs, again, using the NVMe protocol. S3100 series, which is their entry level enterprise SSD for cloud and data center deployments. The SSD 540S and SSD Pro 5400S, which are the most interesting ones for our audience. You know, if you take a look at, there's a giant page of information up on the Intel website, but we're basically looking at anywhere from 120 gigabytes on the 540S series, 2.5-inch drives, SATA interfaces, anywhere from 120 gigabytes up to 1 terabyte. And it's cool because they now are listing a 1 terabyte M.80 millimeter M.2 drive, which makes sense because we've seen inside of some of the SSD enclosures, 2.5-inch SSD enclosures lately, and there's, you know, an SSD enclosure, 2.5-inch hard drive enclosure, and just a little memory stick inside of it. But the 120 gigabyte drives, everything's pretty much reading at up to 560 megabytes per second. The 120 gigabyte drives are reading at 70 megabytes per second. 180s are reading at 90, 240s at 100, 360s at 100, 480s at 125, and the 1 terabyte drives at 125. You know, anywhere from 55 to 72,000 4K IOPS. You know, in terms of reads, and anywhere from 13,500 to 36,000 IOPS, 4K writes, 4 kilobyte writes, which is, you know, typical. We've seen the more memory it's on the board, the faster the writes, you know, the faster the sequential writes and the better the IOPS performance. The other thing they announced was the 5400S, which is their sort of business or pro grade SSDs, which come in, two, again, 2.5-inch and M.2. Drives, very, very similar specs to the 540s, but a pretty good rollout of stuff. Pricing, as far as I know, is not available, and I'm not quite sure what the ship date is going to be. It does not seem to be available yet, but just for fun, let me do one last check on Amazon. Just in case, we've had that happen. Well, we're between the beginning of the show and the middle of the show, things have changed, and this is not one of those examples. But, you know, you can get an Intel Core i5 Mobile i5 540M.
Nice.
For a ThinkPad or an EliteBook for a mere $28.95. Oh, well, look. Intel Pentium 4 540, 3.2 gigahertz, 800 megahertz, 1 megabyte, socket 775 CPU. Used, $3.95.
$3.95, nice.
$3.95. The creme de la creme of computing a long time ago. New drives from the enterprise to the consumer from Intel to go check out if you are shopping for the latest and greatest. Oh my goodness, iFixit.com. We are huge fans of iFixit.com. There is a lot of iFixit.com repair that has gone on in my life over the years. They're your complete DIY electronics repair solution. Not just because they sell tools and parts, but because of the guides. The guides are the thing. 19,000 free step-by-step repair guides and a huge inventory of replacement parts and tools with lifetime warranty. iFixit has your repair needs covered. Their latest and greatest is the all-new Pro Tech Toolkit. It is gorgeous. A complete new design, just as rugged as it was before. Easier to use. The tools are easier to access. And you might laugh, like, really? How hard is it to access tools, Pat? But you know, if nothing else, the new 64-bit driver kit, which replaces the 54-bit driver kit, which, as you can see right now, is full of screws for an AT1202 amplifier that I have to reassemble. But if you take a look inside of that, basically you pull the lid off and you access your drivers. And that actually is so much easier than the old driver enclosure they had. Plus, you get another 10 bits inside of there. More bits means fewer repair roadblocks. They got a flex extension for hard-to-read screws, just like in the older version. More plastic opening screws, precision electrostatic discharge, safe tweeters. I love the fact that there's an actual magnet inside of this, which is where the driver kit goes. Let me see if I can raise it all the way up. But there's actually a big old piece of magnetic material, so if you pull the driver kit off, you have a place to magnetically attach your screws. Suction cup for display assembly removal, metal spudger, iFixit's own Jimmy Bar tool, which is actually, if you've spent some quality time tearing things apart, delicately disassembling things so you can repair a broken screen and or other issue inside of your phone, they are pretty awesome. Best part, it's backed up by iFixit's lifetime warranty. Buy it because it's awesome, or don't. You still get access to all the free repair resources on iFixit.com. So the kind of the bonus if you buy from iFixit.com is you help make sure the company's still around, pulling together the instructions that make it so much easier for you to repair things yourself and make your dollars go that far, that much farther. Grab an All2 ProTech toolkit and get going on your next fix, hack, or build. Just head over to iFixit.com/twit. Use the code TWICH, T-W-I-C-H, at checkout. That means you'll help support This Week in Computer Hardware. That code is TWICH. And you'll save $5 on your purchase of $10 or more. We want to thank iFixit for their support. That's good if you're buying parts, repair parts, other tools, other kits. Just head on over to iFixit.com/TWIT, and please use the code T-W-I-C-H when you check out. So I want to thank iFixit for all their support, and I want to thank them for making it possible for me to continue to own phones. Someday I'll even learn how to not break the screens. It's a dream. It's a goal. Speaking of dreams and goals, you have the new Oculus Rift. You have been hands-on with the Vive. Last we checked, the Vive had the lead in the Ryan Schrout. You're laughing and I'm laughing, but you know, you basically said the Vive feels more natural for gaming. It feels better for gaming. I think a lot of that has to do with the controls that are available for the Vive that aren't yet available for the Oculus.
I had this weird kind of it's not an epiphany because I'm not sure it's true, but I had this weird kind of thought process a couple of days ago where the Rift is it's a headset. It's a head mounted display, but then you're using a controller, using a keyboard, mouse. You're interacting with it in every other way like you normally would. Right. Yeah. And it's you know, it's standing or sitting, but it's in a kind of a small space.
Is it breaking the fourth wall by using a traditional controller and or keyboard and mouse?
There's some of that, right? And then, but the Vive, you know, it can do all that, but then it's big push and it's differentiating at this point by the room scale stuff and using the controllers and ability to rotate and turn and take several steps in all directions and kind of do different things. And it's almost as if the idea of a head-mounted VR display, like, it's been almost 4 years since the Kickstarter for the Rift happened, right?
Right.
And I almost wonder if it feels, like, out of date now. Like, oh, yeah, you're just doing a VR headset? Man, that's so old now. Like, the new hotness is head-mounted display with room-scale VR. And that's what is, like, the newer, more interesting thing for media or just people who are following the coverage of VR very closely. Now, I don't think that's fair, right? Because I was using the analogy that, like, I've had an Oculus DK1 for 3 years, right? DK2 for a year and a half or more. And it's like, okay, well, the Oculus Rift is just a much, much, much better, vastly improved version of that. Well, you know,
you could also argue it's the first truly usable one, you know.
Having
watched people first put on the first DK, the first developer kit, and literally hurl the thing off their heads with the owner frantically trying to catch it before it hit the concrete floor as they sprinted and fell towards a garbage can. You know, the second DK, I think, solved the vast majority of those issues. The one that's chipping now should have pretty much all of them. I mean, you know, do you have the desire to vomit? Are you disconnected from the VR environment? I mean, it's crazy to watch, you know, having had that experience with you know, basically standing on a 4-foot circle with the Oculus Rift. There's a great HTC Vive video going out where people are basically walking on a, you know, 2x10. And pretending they're out in space and they have to rescue a puppy or a kitten or a cow, stuffed cow or something. And people are reacting viscerally. They're panicked. They're falling. They look like they're shaking. They're showing visible signs of distress, which means it is an incredibly compelling and immersive environment. much more so. I mean, you can get your suspension of disbelief on while you're staring at a television, while you're staring at a movie screen, while you're staring at a movie screen with 300 people around you. But it's much more intimate to have, you know, the earbuds, the headphones on, and the complete, yeah, those earbuds are delightful. The, you know, the goggles on, that's, you know, that's pretty crazy. They, you know, one of the VR companies did the big gathering up in London, where they basically took over a giant meat locker, a cold warehouse, and filled it with fake snow and made everybody put on their giant poofy "I'm going to Everest" pants, you know, down-filled pants, and created this very enveloping environment, and they pretended to climb Everest. So I think I completely get what you're saying about it being more immersive. Have any more of the games stood out? Or have you just not had enough time on station to really make a decision about that?
Yeah, like in terms of the content side of things, I haven't spent enough time with any individual title to come out and say like, oh, this one really sells me on buying it. I still think too many of the demos or too many of the games that I've played are short form entertainment, right? Maybe this is something you do for 30 minutes. Maybe it's something you do for an hour or 2 hours. But I don't know if there's a whole lot of stuff that I've tried so far where I've said, oh, I'm going to play this for 10 hours or 15 hours. I'm going to do like kind of a normal gaming session with this. Like I'm going to play it for 2 or 3 hours at one sitting, as opposed to kind of filtering through and trying different things over and over again. Now, a lot of that will wear off as the novelty wears off, and you'll kind of filter down to the games that, you know, you're more attracted to, the styles you're more attracted to. You know, if you like the flight sim stuff, then you get you play some Oculus Rift, right? Or not flight sim, but more dog fighting type stuff, right? And you'll find your own comfort levels and you'll go from there. But the one I'm most interested to try is Job Simulator on the Vive, like the full version of that, where you go through all the scenarios. But that's not I'm going to spend 5 hours a day wanting to play that. Maybe it will be that way, but maybe I'll play it for 3 or 4 hours total, and then I'll be done with it. And then what?
People said that about Quake too. And how many years has QuakeCon been going on?
Yeah. I mean, there's no multiplayer, significance to this. You can only interact with so many things and in so many different ways. I think there will be those titles, and there are probably some of them out there already that I just haven't had the opportunity to try yet and really invest in. I've never claimed to be a game reviewer necessarily. And so a lot of my interest in this stuff from a work perspective is finding things that are interesting to test or interesting to look at, and how do you evaluate performance on it, and how does it affect how people build systems, right? But to do that, you have to find these titles that are going to be the most interesting, the most popular, and kind of go from there. I feel bad because I got the Rift in on Monday, and I probably used it for several hours, maybe 2 hours, 3 hours total. And the rest of the time we have been poking and prodding it like having a science subject in your lab, trying to figure out how it works, how we can take data out of it, right? Okay, yes, we've seen what you're useful for. Now we're going to kind of dissect you and see how your inner workings are,
figure out how to benchmark you.
right. And that's what we're doing, right? That's the whole goal. And unfortunately, only a portion of that process is actually playing the games. And so we figure out a lot of other intricate details, I guess.
All right. Reports, ladies and gentlemen, will continue as Ryan discovers more.
It will.
EVGA SC17 Gaming Notebook. Ryan, you did the write-up for this on PC Per. So you were kind of shocked when EVGA said they were going back at CES, when they said they were going into gaming laptops in January. You questioned the move. This is the first one that's here. How's it held up to the other ones you've seen?
I actually like this one a lot. It's hard to be to differentiate in this market because it's been around for a long time. EVGA, the specifications, you can find these exact specs essentially on any number of laptops, right? MSI, Asus laptops. It's a Core i7-6820K HK. So it's a high-performance, unlocked processor, quad-core, hyper-threaded. It's got 32 gigs of RAM in it. It's got a GTX 980M which is not the highest end GPU, but it's the second highest end GPU from NVIDIA on the mobile stack.
Nice.
It's equivalent to just below a GTX 970 desktop. You know, you've got an NVMe SSD. It's a 17.3-inch 4K screen. So it's 4K, so you'll get better image quality and like clarity in Windows, but you do have to deal with, you know, the scaling hiccups that can occur with that. And you're not going to game at 4K on this, right? You're going to game at 1080p and then have it upscale to the 4K resolution of the screen. And it looks fine. But you'll run into the every once in a while where a game may start up kind of going with the default resolution of 3840 by 2160. And you have to, you know, go through the trouble of kind of setting the 1920 by 1080 resolution. And GeForce Experience will help with that as well. It comes pre-installed on the machine. And if you tell it to optimize, it will know that your GPU hardware can't render at 4K. And so it will scale back accordingly. It's fairly thin. It's 1.05 inches thick at its thickest part. It's a unibody design. It's an all-metal body. It's still heavy, though. It's 8 pounds and like 10 ounces, I think, without the power adapter. You've got two USB 3.0 ports, one USB 3.1 port. It does come in the box with a Type-C to Type-A converter, so you'll still have access to it as a normal USB port if you need to. Gigabit Ethernet, HDMI 1.4 output, and then mini DP, two mini DisplayPort connections, one of which can be used for an external G-Sync display if you want as well, which is nice. You know, they've got like nice little touches. It's got that coveted, you can open it with one finger type thing, right? The hinge is designed in a way that it's very smooth motion from the beginning to the end of its total arc. It's got chamfered edges, you know, kind of curved edges on the side of it so that it's nice. That backlight, the EVGA logo on the back of the screen is actually an individual LED. It is not part of the backlight, so you can turn it on and off independently, which is interesting, you know, if you're in a situation where that light is annoying, either as, you know, you're working in the dark or something like that, and it glowing off the wall behind you or something like that. The keyboard is good. It's got a lot of travel in the keyboard. It's got a whole lot of overclocking options. Like, you can get into the UEFI in this, and it looks just like a normal kind of motherboard BIOS from EVGA. All the overclocking options, most of the overclocking options you could want are there. It has an updated version of Precision X called Precision X Mobile that lets you do all that in Windows. One application to control overclocking your CPU and your GPU. And the best part, at least in my opinion, is that since EVGA knows your hardware, they know your CPU and GPU, they have like a preset for overclocking, right? They know what SKUs you have and everything. And the default overclock takes your processor from 3.2 to 3.8 gigahertz, so like a pretty massive 20% jump. And then your GPU goes up by about 8% or so. And that's just by hitting a single button. And you can do that through like function keys on your keyboard as well. So it's expensive as hell, but all these high-end gaming laptops are. This is $2,699, which falls right in line with kind of like the MSI lineup. The MSI has a very competitive system for $2,599. It's thicker. Mm-hmm. It's plastic body design. It has a 1080p screen instead of a 4K screen. So if you take those kind of things into consideration, you know, in some ways the EVGA laptop is better than that. I think it's designed better. I think it's a little bit nicer looking. It's still huge. Actually, let me... it's hard to lift with one hand with the leverage that you need for it. But, I mean, there you go. There's your EVGA SC17 gaming laptop. But it's relatively thin. I'm trying to find an angle that it shows, right? Right? For a gaming laptop with that much power. Now, you'll still need a sizable backpack to fit this in it. You know, and some strengthened shoulder muscles would help too. but they did other stuff. Like, this is kind of interesting. This is the power adapter for it, right? This is the power adapter. It's kind of this wide flat thing. You can see how thin it is, which is awesome in my view in terms of like being able to put this into a backpack or a satchel or something like that, as opposed to getting the kind of the big brick that would take up a lot of space in a bag in the Z direction, if you will. So this is their first attempt at it. You know, we saw it at CES. It's pretty good. And I think they followed through with it, actually. So, you know, not surprisingly well, but they did it well. They'll have another version probably somewhat later in the year that will have a G-Sync display. But this one's just kind of a standard display for now. So a nice piece of hardware if you're looking for a mobile gaming kind of workstation thing.
Hold no bars.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Microsoft backs up some UWP restrictions. Interesting Microsoft build this week. you know, the news that they're basically going to put bash and Linux commands into Windows 10. There's going to be
it's crazy,
Windows 10 Anniversary Edition coming out this summer. We won't get too deep into that because it's not too hardware oriented. Above and beyond to say that Windows 10 adoption is very, very brisk. They're closing in on 300 million seats or installs, and they're very, very happy with how DX12 is going. You know, so the Universal Windows Platform, that's a successor of WinRT. You remember that as the thing that was on tablets that you can't get software for, or probably at this point drivers for anymore. So UWP forced web browsers to be reskins of Internet Explorer, forced developers to get their software and themselves certified before publishing, something I am afraid that will eventually come in the Windows 10 operating system as a service. You know, because they're certainly making it awkward to install third-party apps, just in the sense that, you know, you have to go through and change settings to not get kind of a warning every time you launch something that didn't come from the Microsoft Store. At least it feels like that to me. I may be exaggerating just because of a bunch of weird little pieces of software I've been using the last week. Scott showed you the write-up on PC Per, you know, because... You know, people are concerned. Will they ban entire categories of software? Will they ban usage? You know, and this, Scott writes, is where we get to today's announcement. Microsoft Phil Spencer essentially responding to Tim Sweeney's concerns of the PC gaming community at large announced changes to the UWP to make it more open. I haven't had too much time to think about it, and some necessary details don't translate well to a keynote segment, but we'll relay what we know. First, they plan to open up VSync off, FreeSync, and G-Sync in May. I find this kind of odd since Windows 10 will not receive its significant update, anniversary update, until July. I'm not sure how they would deliver this. It seems a little big for a simple Windows update patch. I mean, they have yet to even push new versions of their Edge web browser outside of Windows 10 builds. The second change is more interesting. Microsoft announced, albeit without dedicating a solid release date or window to allow modding and overlays in UWP applications. This means that software will be able to somehow enter into UWP's process and users will be encouraged to somehow access the file system of UWP applications. Currently, you need to jump through severe hoops to access the contents of Windows Store applications. They still do not address the issue of sideloading and developing software without a certificate. Granted, you can do both of those things in Windows 10, but in a way that seems like it could be easily removed in a future build. You may have heard me mentioning that a minute or two ago. If UWP has enough momentum and whoever runs Microsoft at the time decides to.
What I find interesting about this is, I don't know if I would consider it backstepping on what they did, or if I should be nice to them and consider this like, oh, they were actually learning from the environment. Like, backstepping insinuates that they had some kind of malicious intent up front. That they, you know, had pressure on and backed up on, whereas just, hey, they figured out how to learn from the community is more of a, oh, they weren't quite sure what to do before, and now they have an idea.
It begs the question, are at some point they going to shut down? I don't see it happening anytime in the next couple of years, but I can certainly see a point where they will want to, you know, basically turn Windows applications into something similar to the Apple Store, where everything is locked down. That said, the lack of success they've had, especially in China and some other places, with keeping software clean that's installed in the app or available in Apple's store for iOS,
right,
may influence whether or not Windows wants to lock down the environment. Certainly, something worth keeping an eye on, and
yep.
a good write up from Scott. I do not look forward to the idea that. We may not have access to all of the things or the ability to load any software I want. I find that really frustrating.
Yep, I agree.
Hey, this episode of Twitch is brought to you by IT Pro TV. IT changes daily, people, and a good IT pro is constantly learning and staying up to date with current technology certifications, because if you don't, you get crushed by the steamroller of new and exciting technologies to support. IT Pro TV's high-quality video tutorials not only keep your IT skills current, but they will bring you closer to achieving that new IT job you've been working towards. 1,000 hours of content. New courses are added weekly. You can stream their courses live and on demand worldwide. Your Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, or PC. Plus, learn on the go on your mobile device. Course topics are broad and deep. Microsoft Server 2016 MCSC, CCNP security, CCNA routing and switching, SSH, Azure SQL, cryptography, home router configuration, and more. And if you don't think you need help configuring a home router, you're either a networking geek or you've never actually gone too far inside of your home router. And go home and change the passwords from admin to something more secure. 100 plus step-by-step virtual machine labs and transcender practice exams. That's a $109 value. A low monthly subscription price, no cancellation policy. Transcripts let you follow from start to finish or jump to any part of the video. They have corporate and group pricing if you want to get your whole department edumacated. Clients include, and this is a pretty nice list, people, Harvard, MIT, UCSD, Stanford, and more. If you want to get your chops up, if you want to keep your skills current, if you want to figure out what you don't know so you can learn more, check out itpro.tv/TWICH. That's itpro.tv Twitch to upgrade your brain with the most popular IT certifications. Premium subscriptions are normally $57 a month or $570 a year, but we have a special offer for you. Try it free for 7 days when you sign up using our code TWICH30. That's Twitch30 to check out their courses, live stream, and more. You'll also receive 30% off the lifetime of your account. That's less than $40 a month or $399 for the entire year. itpro.tv/TWICH and use the code Twitch30 to try it free for 7 days and save yourself 30%. We want to thank the crew at IT Pro TV for supporting This Week in Computer Hardware. itpro.tv/TWICH and that offer code is Twitch30. Do us a favor, support the show, go check it out and learn some new and exciting skills to advance your profession. Just saying.
Very cool.
I saw this and I was like, what? Jeremy wrote this up for PC Perch, the Acer Predator Z850 gaming projector, a real mobile monitor, 1920 by 720, which I'm not too thrilled about. But Jeremy says that is a small sacrifice for what this projector is capable of. The minimum throw of the projector, that means how far it can be from the screen or the wall if you're traveling, is 18.5 inches. Basically, in this case, a little bit less, a little bit shorter than the distance between my face and my monitor. And at that distance, 18 and a half inches from the wall, it projects a 120-inch screen. That is so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, the downside, having seen these a lot at CES and in some fairly high-end home theater shops, you know, short throw projectors are kind of the future of home theater projectors because they allow you to put the projector very, very close to the wall, you know, build it into a cabinet, put it up on the ceiling in a way that, you know, when people walk across the room, they don't block the video signal. Not hugely thrilled about the 1920 by 720, which is a 24 by 9 ultra wide HD resolution, but there are worse things in this world. But seriously, 120-inch screen from 18 and a half inches is badass. 3,000 lumens, which is excellent in terms of the lumen count. The 100,000-to-1 contrast ratio is more about flipping, doing creative marketing math. But what's really nice is they're saying the laser diode lamp give you 30,000 hours, which is huge, an incredible length of time for a projector lamp. The downside is you're looking at an MSRP of $4,999.
Yeah, so, you think that's a negative? You think that's a little steep for most people's budgets?
Well, I was on an email thread with several people that waited outside of their local Tesla store to pre-order the Model X, which is somewhere between $130,000, depending on how you configure it right now. The news this morning had, I was in a diner and they actually had shots of people basically camping out in front of the Tesla store. So there is certainly a market for $5,000 projectors if people are, you know, waiting in line to spend $100,000 or $130,000 on a car. Right. I just don't happen to be part of that market right now. Hopefully the MSRP is going to be closer to, you know, $4,000, or excuse me, the street price will be closer to $4,000 than $5,000. But that is, That is a healthy, healthy chunk of cash.
Jeremy pointed out on our podcast last night that one of the benefits of this is that you can take it with you. You don't have to worry about replacing a bunch of light bulbs because of the laser diode in there, right?
Yeah, but, you know, a light bulb, like, you know, the factory light bulb on my projector was supposed to last 2,000 hours, lasted over 5,000, and cost me like $200 to replace. Now, that was 30% the cost of the projector, right? Because I bought it refurbished, and it was like $675 or something like that. Right. You know, the bulbs aren't that expensive. Now, you know, if you think like, you know, okay, if maybe they're $300 bulbs and you don't have to replace them for 8 years, that right. Certainly there's some math there. But in my personal experience, and, you know, I think the quality of electricity and the number of hours you use your projector are dramatically going to impact this. I've found that bulbs last a lot longer than they are expected to. And there are some quality manufactured bulbs that are actually from the appropriate manufacturer you can pick up, because third-party projector bulbs can create some really serious issues with your projector, because there are some really crappy third-party bulbs for sale. But in my experience, the cost of the bulbs was considerably lower than I had anticipated it to be.
Right.
You know, at this point, I'm close to, I don't know, 7-8 years of ownership of a projector, maybe longer, and I'm on my second bulb, which means I'm still, you know, for my 100-inch 1080p projection screen, I've still spent 30 or 40% less, including the cost of the bulb that I put in there, than a 55-inch HDTV would have cost me.
Sure.
When I bought the projector. So,
yeah.
You know, hey, look, there's people out there that are going to want it and have the money. I can get it. It should be pretty nice. You know, if you have that kind of money, you can also get some world-class 1080p or 4K projectors that actually broadcast in 1080p or 4K.
The resolution is odd, right? It's a 24:9 aspect ratio, which is, like, compelling in some ways. But obviously, yeah, the 720 height issue there is definitely noteworthy. We haven't figured this out yet, but they claim to have an adapter that will enable 1080p lossless wireless streaming. So I don't know if that's 1080p into the device that then gets down converted to 1920 or like 1280 by 720 for output. But we're trying to figure that out still as well. I'm trying to get one of these in for review, because it just sounds really interesting to me. So we'll see what they come up with.
It's funny. I've got one of the 34-inch Dell Ultra Sharps in for testing right now. And those are 3440 by 1440 pixels, you know, which is, again, it's you know, it's bigger than QHD. It's smaller than UHD 4K. But it's a pretty compelling gaming experience. My concern is more is if you're using, you know, consoles or other devices with this screen, whether you're going to feel kind of frustrated because of the bars, or if you're going to have to spend, you know, additional funds to get that adapter or not. Yeah, you know, it's you know, if you have $5,000 for a projector, that's, you know, that's awesome. I would just prefer that it actually did a standard projector size.
Nice.
You know, I mean, or you know, a standard screen size, but. You know, it also points out that there's a pretty amazing array of projectors out right now. Everything from super affordable stuff from Epson and Optoma. You know, we've been talking about it a bunch on the AVXL with Robert Heron. You know, if you've never been up to Projector Central, it's a really good place to sort of educate yourself and learn a lot about what's going on in the world of projectors, because it's changed a lot and it's pretty sophisticated. You know, but at this point, you know, you're looking at like Sony's HW40ES, which is a 1080p projector with absolutely stunning image quality, 1700 lumens, so you're probably going to want to pull the shades on the room. But that's got approximately no noise. It's a 21 dB fan inside of that projector. You know, it's a fantastic piece of hardware. 2400 lumens from the A800, that's a Panasonic projector. Again, you know, they're claiming a lamp life of 4,000 hours, 22 dB of noise. That's 1759. Now, those have to be 10 feet from the wall. Those don't have the really complicated lens system that a short throw projector does. But, you know, for $1,000, you can get a pretty nice projector from BenQ or Epson and get, you know, 2,000, 2,500 lumens, 1080p, you know, 3,000, 2,000 to 3,000 plus, you know, hours off of the lamp. So, you know, if you're looking for, you know, 4K or for a short throw projector, the prices get pretty hefty pretty quickly. But there are options out there, and they are worth considering. Yeah, I mean, here we have a, you know, an Optoma HD141X, which, if I'm not mistaken, is not a 1080p projector, but I want to double check that. It is. It's a 1080p home theater projector. It is $527, and they're claiming a lamp life of 5,000 hours and a brightness of 3,000 lumens. Now, again, you're going to have that like 10 feet from your wall. By the way, that's one of the cool things. Projector Central, where they have the calculator that helps you figure out the throw distance versus the image size.
Yep, helpful.
Extremely helpful if you're trying to lay out, a projector or figure out how big your screen needs to be. But yeah, I mean, for this $527 street price HD14 or HD141X, you know, you've got the 5,000 hour bulb. And let me make sure that's not a price on closeout. But there's, you know, for $1,000, you can get a pretty amazing projector for 1080p. For a couple thousand dollars, you can get a top of the line. Yeah, it's a standard price, $549. Mm. Yeah, 1080p, DLP.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's really bright. 3,000 ANSI lumens.
Yeah, 3,000 is huge, yeah.
Is pretty nice, and you're looking for... 1.0 screen gain. Yeah, you're looking at something that'll comfortably do a 180-inch screen. You know, that's 20 feet from the wall. So if you get it down, yeah, that's way too brightness. You know, in that case, you're going to need a big room. You're going to need about 20 feet, but you're going to get a, you know, 180-inch.
As long as I can watch in the daylight.
Well, yeah. Which is nothing wrong with that. So I'm just saying, this is really cool. But there's a lot of projectors out there and a lot of projector options.
Fair enough.
Short throws are a little less common. We've been playing around. We had a question on Tech Thing about the Odroid C2. Showed up on Hackaday. And, you know, we're like, hey, we were asked if this was a interesting or a good Raspberry Pi 3 substitute. And it really is. part of what makes it so compelling, really sorry about the coughing. Hopefully I don't have what the kids have. What you're looking at is Jeff Geerling's blog here, and that's some pictures of the Odroid C2. It's like a 2 gigahertz 4-core processor, a big old heatsink on there. You know, the layout's very, very similar to Raspberry Pi 2. You know, it's got GPIO pins, which for the most part, hard kernel laid out with a few pin differences, very similar in terms of the Pi hats that are available for the Raspberry Pi. Four USB ports, USB 2.0 ports, a gigabit Ethernet, no onboard Wi-Fi. But the Ethernet jack is gigabit, and it is not, unlike the Raspberry Pi, running over a single kind of USB bus. So USB and Ethernet performance are not compromised, and the Ethernet performance is significantly higher. And if you scroll down to the benchmarks at the bottom of the page, you're going to see like 938 iPerf raw throughput on the gigabit Ethernet, 938 megabits per second versus 321 megabits per second on the Pi 3. So if you're doing server-based stuff, you know, a Raspberry Pi SyncBox, a Raspberry Pi server, if networking is a big deal for you, that is a huge jump in performance on there. And overall, he's got a pretty crazy sort of pretty awesome Drupal stack of Raspberry Pis. So he did some Drupal benchmarks where he was getting 36% better performance on his standard anonymous Drupal benchmark. That's requests per second. So that's a pretty huge difference. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see a big yellow column with a spot at the top of it that says 36% faster. There it is. That'll give you an idea of sort of the performance difference. And another difference between the Odroid C2 and the Raspberry Pi architecture is that it will use EMMC modules, which are going to give you significantly improved performance in terms of I.O. If you go to the hard kernel website, It links you back to Korea. It's a $16 shipping fee and like a week wait. But it turns out they have a U.S. distributor here in California called Ameridroid, and you can pick up an Odroid C2 for $40. So if you've been waiting for Resi, you know, the kind of big difference is, you know, if in terms of an Odroid, you need to either know your Linux or be ready to learn your Linux, because unlike the Raspberry Pi, there isn't a huge number of sort of pre-built distros and or huge communities building support. Hackaday's got some pretty cool links to some projects using the Odroids. I got to speak to one of our viewers who uses them. They use them professionally in their networking corporation to create tools for use in the field, and they are very, very happy. I don't know if we mentioned it, but Mr. Geerling also did a great collection of benchmarks on micro SD card performance. And it turns out just because a card is in the same class doesn't mean it's even remotely delivering the same performance.
Nope. Yeah.
And this is a pretty huge, like, you're looking at C10 cards, you know, you're looking at cards here anywhere from 12.8 megabytes per second up to 18.45, so a good 30%+ difference in performance. And ironically, the most expensive cards were not necessarily the fastest cards. And you also notice, if you look at the USB performance, the USB performance is considerably higher than any of the SD cards. So something to be aware from. He's also got an article, if you really get geeky, about overclocking the micro SD on Raspberry Pis. But if you're curious about Raspberry Pis and making them perform well, jeffgeerling.com is a good place to swing by. It's good stuff. So, our building right now, one of the things we're building is Amazon released all the tools to turn a Raspberry Pi into an Amazon Echo.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
I was pretty surprising. I was also shocked and amazed to discover that you own a collection of dash buttons, Amazon's dash buttons.
I own two of them. One is Bounty paper towels. The other is Glad garbage bags. Hmm. And I will say that they work perfectly, but I use them way less frequently than I thought. And the amount of time I save from going into my Amazon history and reordering paper towels versus hitting a button to hit paper towels is minimal. Right now, if I had everything in your life was like this, maybe you could see the benefit to that. But it is pretty nice. Like, I still think it's cool to. I just took the last roll of paper towels out of the garage. I hit the button on the way in the door, and I don't have to worry about it. Right? There's still benefit to that. You know,
that's just wow.
I'm proud of it. I had thought about figuring out, like, apparently there are hacks around where you can, like, reprogram them and hack them so that they can order other things that aren't, like, Dash supported currently. You know, I don't know what, like, it would be dog chew toys or something like that. Something we go through on a regular basis. But by the time I drive to my office, sit down at the computer and try to remember all the things that I wanted to order and I forget. Right. So either I need an Echo in every room of the house so I can add it to my shopping list, or I need a dash button for every item in my house, and then I don't have to worry about it either way. Right?
Yeah. Okay. I'm somewhat less than convinced, but
yeah. Okay.
Perhaps I just don't understand.
So they added a bunch of stuff today. Is that what this is all about?
I mentioned it, and I expected you to be like, and you're like, I have a bunch of those.
I have two. I didn't say a bunch. I have two.
In any case, 80 more brands. It's what I'm discovering. Maybe the whole, after thermometers and light bulbs, dash buttons may be the most successful Internet of Things devices out there.
Yeah.
80 more brands joining the previous lineup, including several now in the food and drink space.
I wish they would just let you Clorox, do Doritos, anything in the store.
Energizer, like, Honest Kids.
Why can't
L'Oreal,
we just do anything?
Paris Revitalift, Lysol, Pete's Coffee. Oh wait,
what if there's a candle? There's a candle button now. I don't.
Maybe down for the Pete's Coffee. Playtex, Purina, Red Bull, 7th Generation, Slim Jim, Snuggle, Snarbucks, Trojan, Vitamin Water, and others.
See? These are all good things. Yeah.
These are all good things. You sound so creepy when you say it like that.
Yeah. All right. Fine.
I'm just saying. On that bright and cheerful note, ladies and gentlemen, time to walk away from this week's episode of This Week in Computer Hardware. Yeah.
We have a guest. Not yet. Well.
Don't walk away yet.
Yeah, don't
Oh, we wanted to talk about it on camera.
He says, don't walk away yet. Look.
Don't walk away yet.
Look. Woo.
The Dracula's Rift. Ooh. Ladies and gentlemen.
Can you hear my mic?
The man,
can you hear me?
The myth, legend himself, Mr. Leo Laporte.
Hey, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I can hear you.
All right. So I got a lot of questions. Ryan helped us build this thing. I assembled it on Wednesday because we found out that this was coming. And I saw, of course, your unboxing. Nice job, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I can't wait to play some of those games. What's your favorite right now? Is it Eve?
Yeah, probably still that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Admit it.
I have some questions. First of all,
okay.
What is wrong with Asus? Look at this BIOS. It's got spinning fans and
yep.
buttons and doodads, but you can't figure out what the hell's going on. It's like you got to dig into the advanced mode, and then it's got right. it's just a mess. This is the worst. I've never seen such a junked up BIOS ever. But,
well, all the BIOSes are looking that way.
I know. It's consumer BIOSes.
Well, it's consumer, but they give you a ton of information on the performance of the fan and the cooling subsystem. And
yeah, but they don't need to have revolving pictures of the fan, honest.
Well, like, you know.
I would rather.
Look, you're using a mouse, though. You couldn't do that before.
Yeah. You know. I like the Dell BIOSes. They're simple. They're straightforward.
Understood.
In my day, it was 640 by 480 text. graphics.
It's useful, but it's hard to figure out where the thing is that you want. Not that that hasn't always been a problem in BIOSes, but
well, and everybody still uses a slightly different name for the exact same setting inside.
Right. True.
Right.
Just like they did in the BIOS.
But by the way, I can't get back to the whirly dirly fan.
Hit F7 again.
F7?
Oh,
there
F7.
You go.
Yeah.
Look, woo, the fan, it's spinning.
In high
resolution.
Yeah,
at 34 inches. So, okay. Oh, and by the way, I had power. I had superpower before. It went back. Okay.
Don't worry, it just keeps sliding back and forth.
I know, it's silly. It doesn't need all the animation and the graphs and everything. However, my question is, I see, as you can see, the two, by the way, learn something. You mm-hmm. have to plug your, there are two different SATA buses. I didn't realize that. And I had them on separate SATA buses, so I had to put them both on the same SATA bus.
Oh,
so that,
right.
Then I could make raids, which we did. We made a raid one on your suggestion of the 2-3 terabytes. But I don't see the SSD. Is that normal, or should I be seeing it?
No, that's not normal.
Okay, so I screwed up.
You might not have.
We're
trying to figure this out because I think what you might have to do is so on that chipset when you enable RAID and then you enable PCIe NVMe based SSDs,
yes.
Sometimes
I saw
well, not
that.
Sometimes you disable, you lose right. some of the SATA connections,
yeah.
So you may have to switch it.
I did see that in in some forums,
yeah.
And then good luck finding, where that is.
Gotcha. Yeah. I found it once
before.
Oh, you did? Okay.
That's the worst feeling. I don't find it anymore. Oh, God. Oh, Lord.
What I was going to do, actually, between now and Saturday, but I can do it today, is get a hold of Asus and make sure exactly which ones it should be and what the... ports are supported for which
ones. Okay, here we go. It should be in here somewhere, right? You'd think. CPU, platform. It's not in smart information, I'm sure, but I'll click it and see. Device. It's not going to be there, right? Onboard devices. That's probably it. These are onboard devices. Yeah, there we go. So. What do you think? Any tips, by the way, we're going to hold off on the Oculus, as hard as this is, I'm going to hold off on the Oculus Rift install until Saturday, and we'll do it live on the new screensaver. That is hard. I really want to play with it.
The setup of the Rift is straightforward. Okay. Like, it walks you through it step by step. It's super easy to do. You don't need a whole lot of space for this setup. When you get the Vive, you'll need a whole lot of space to do it. But it works really simply out of the box. So I was pretty impressed by how they made it user consumable, if you will.
Good. So yeah. Do you think it's possible that I will not be able to see the SSD?
Well, if you don't see the SSD, we can't install to it. So we'll have to fix that.
I'll put it on. Well, I could put it on the spinning drives.
You could, but we don't want to do that.
It's not an install. It's not like I didn't screw it in tight enough.
No.
You saw me put it in. It seemed like it was in there nice and tight.
Yeah, no. As long as it's making electrical contact, it's good.
Yeah, it's definitely. It's in the socket.
Unless you snapped it in half or something like that. That's a different
issue. And the screw is there. But it's not even, showing up in the BIOS. So should I update the BIOS?
You should. Yes. You should definitely be on the latest one,
It's been amazing, Leo, how many features have been not functioning on all three of the motherboards. Both of the 170 motherboards and two of the laptops have picked up in the last few months. Major changes have been taking place between what was in the box and what was enabled. Not having the right TDP signatures inside the BIOS on laptops, so the laptop processors ran throttled, like 30% slower than they should have been. And then the BIOS upgrade corrects it.
It's gotten so easy to overclock. I mean, this is pretty cool. You pick your PC scenario, and then, I'm running it right now at its 4 gigahertz standard speed, but I can choose the scenario I want if it would respond, which it's not. That's the other thing. I mean, just give me, for crying out loud. They've overdone it's janky. There we go. Daily computing or gaming media editing? Let's do gaming media editing. Box cooler, tower cooler, water cooler. Well, thanks to Ryan, water cooled. So they're going to overclock this, and they're actually going to do it. If it becomes unstable, just, sorry.
That capability actually exists in their software as well, which you can install once you get into Windows. And it will do that whole thing, reboot, check, update settings. And once it does crash, it actually goes back to the step previous reboots and it kind of stabilizes you there. It actually works pretty well. One thing I might try if you're trying to just get the OS installed is disconnect the two hard drives.
Okay.
And see if your SSD shows up then.
That's easy enough.
Yeah. I would try that first.
Thank you for the tips. Thank you for helping us build the Overgum. It's beautiful, by the way, inside. You can't really tell because of the monitors in the way, but oh my gosh. This is a really lovely machine, all lit up, and it's just pretty, and I like the window.
It's nice.
We've come a long way, Patrick.
Don't let the monitor fall off the table.
That's okay.
Did you see the machine I built, the micro ITX machine I built, Leo?
No.
Let's see if I can. I have the lid off of it right now.
I like Micro ITX. I have to say, I'm after building this, I'm more in favor of NUX and Micro ITX than I was. Look at that. That's pretty.
Yeah, this is a Core i7 6700 with 1 terabyte hard drive. I don't know. I remember at the moment this is a 750 or 950.
I see you got the ROG motherboard. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, the ROG motherboard's pretty badass, but the whole thing. Is smaller than a phone book.
I know, it's amazing.
Enough to remember a phone book.
On the other hand, since we're doing an Oculus Rift, why have you're going to be taking up this much space anyway? Who cares how big the computer is? It is nice and quiet. I have to say that. Given how much heat I'm generating in this overclocked thing.
Did you go with?
We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'll disconnect these two SATA drives and see if I can see the M2. Otherwise, what's your recommendation? Just install on the SATA, I guess.
We'll go from there. I would rather have you install to the SSD and then have us figure out the hard drive issue after that. Because you can install to the SSD, get Windows running, get Oculus running, and then we can.
Yeah, I agree. If disconnecting the SATA drives fixes it, I don't mind that. I can live with that.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
And then I was going to use Rufus to make my install media, but I realized they now have a Windows 10 media creation tool, so I'm running that. That's the same thing, right? It's UEFI and all of that, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Yeah. Well, it'd be crazy if it weren't. By the way, what's with all this UEFI secure boot stuff? That's bogus.
It makes things more complicated. It makes things more difficult to troubleshoot, for sure.
It sure does.
I will agree with you there. It has not been as smooth as I would like.
I have to say, I understand hobbyists' desire to do, you know, to build these themselves. But unless you're really motivated, just buy a pre-built PC. It's a lot easier. Let Dell go tear their hair out. Hey, thanks. I didn't mean to interrupt your show, guys, but as long as I have you and Patrick, I should get some help on this thing. You know what I did, by the way, and I know the people at home watching know I did this. I forgot when I assembled it, the I.O. little I.O. cover. So I had to disassemble the whole thing, put it in, reassemble it. I have to do it one more time because one of the tabs in the I.O. cover is sticking out and covering the USB. So I got to take the whole thing apart or sacrifice a USB slot. I think I might sacrifice the USB slot.
Yeah, you know, I can see that either way.
It's kind of nasty. I mean, it's like, oh, man. But it's really, it's a nice piece. Funny. Thank you for the all the recommendations.
Of course.
And everybody who watched us put it together, we've got each segment, how we choose the hard drive, the CPU, the motherboard, the case, all of that, from about six episodes of the new Screensavers. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday, we'll finish it up. It booted on the second try. First try, I'd forgot to power. There are two connectors to the motherboard to power the CPU and the motherboard.
Yep.
I left one off. Everything seemed to start, but nothing happened. So, so we connected that. Booted first try. I jumped up and down. Saturday, we put this thing on here, the Oculus Rift.
Very cool.
Thanks, guys.
Congratulations.
Great show. Hey, I'm excited. Come on over, Patrick. Play with it. It's easier to get to here than it is to get to Louisville.
yeah, true.
Have you played with the Vive yet?
I haven't. I ordered one too. So we're gonna have two Oculus Rifts and a Vive. And that's, by the way, a standing invitation not just for you, Patrick, but anybody who's in the Petaluma area, come by, watch a show, and we'll let you play with the Oculus Rift or the Vive. You can get an idea of what this thing is like.
Good chance to demo it.
Yeah, why not?
Yep.
We'll keep it running in the back.
Sounds
we'll
good.
Keep a light on.
I'm going to get my Eve Valkyrie on.
It's all about Job Simulator.
Did you say job? I heard him say that. Job? Like work?
Like J-O-B. Yeah, Job Simulator.
Why would you want to do that?
It's really funny. You watch it in the video. Watch it in the Vive video that I did.
Okay.
It's fun.
Do you have a Vive there?
I have a Vive Pre here, yes.
Lucky dude.
Yeah.
Well, I ordered it. But, you know, I'm not on the fast track for that one.
Well, you know.
Are you excited about running Bash on Windows 10?
I'm more excited than I should be.
Actually, I'm really excited. But everybody should understand, it's not Linux. It's kind of like reverse wine is what it is. Which is really interesting that Microsoft would even do that, right?
Interesting is a very gracious word for that. Somebody also said they looked like they were exposing the APIs to HTTP calls. I was like, what?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that made no...
That sounds like Microsoft.
Oh, my goodness.
You can SSH out, though, which is nice. And you can run most of the utilities, except the one that I really want, that is Screen and Tmux. Neither one of those work. But most of the other standard Ubuntu builds, you know, the ELF builds right out of the box... That's pretty. I think that makes me think again about Windows 10. Although I have to say, I'm so sorry I bought this thing. It has not, even with the BIOS fix, it's never been reliable.
Which one did you buy?
This is the Surface Book. You know the clothespin edition.
The Pro's been pretty good.
I don't. I think it's a Skylake issue. I don't know. They just haven't been able to. Oh, and look, I got the new iPad today too. It's been a busy day.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, I haven't opened it. We'll do a quick unboxing before Scott Wilkinson.
Have you played around with the XPS 13?
I love my XPS 13 from last year. I want to get the 15. That looks awesome. And I'm running. When I got the XPS 13, then I got this. So I put Ubuntu on the XPS 13, and Linux runs quite nicely on those Dells. So I've been very happy with that. Even the touch works, which is nice.
That's a big plus when the touchscreen works.
Yeah, you know, I'm torn because I had really about to abandon Windows because of this, you know, this crazy force people to use Windows 10 campaign. Then they put Bash on it.
So now he's back in.
Now I'm kind of thinking maybe I should go back.
Leave the OS, take the cannoli.
Yeah. Such a giveth and such a taketh away. Anyway, nice to see you guys, both of you. There it is, Job Simulator, just what I need. God, it looks just like Tech TV, Patrick.
It bears a disturbing resemblance.
It does, doesn't it? Holy cow. What is that, a CRT?
Powder creamer.
This is office space.
Well, they also have, they've also got like, you, I think a new one that they just released is you get to pretend to be working like a fry cook. Oh, the idea is that you're in the 20-something century, the 24th century or whatever it is, and robots do all the work and people have leisure time, and they built a job simulator so people could feel what it was like to do a job.
So you can't really do this
apparently to fling donuts at things.
On the Rift, because you don't have the touch stuff.
Right, not yet. Yeah, I demoed this at GDC on the Oculus Rift with the touch controllers, but yeah, those won't be out till later in the year.
Yeah, that's really
I tried to juggle there and I missed, so there's...
So how long before you barfed?
See, what's interesting, on the Rift, I'm more apt to do that because you're standing still, you're sitting still.
Right.
And any motion outside of that feels weird. But with the Vive, at least the demos I've done so far, like it's all one to one. Like the amount you move is the amount you're moving. So
can you Xerox your butt?
I don't know. I made a copy of that book though. So now I've
How
got
realistic.
Two copies.
Oh, look, you got two of them. That's wild. Yeah.
It's funny. You should watch it. It's good.
Right, I'll install it on my Vive when I get it. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, surprise visit from Mr. Leo Laporte in the mothership. With that, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you tune in on Saturday to get Leo in the Oculus Rift unboxing. Will he vomit? Will he weep with joy? The only way you're going to find out is watching on Saturday on the new screensavers, and perhaps a recap on Twit on Sunday. PCPro.com is a place to find Ryan Trout, at Ryan Trout on Twitter. I'm at Patrick Norton. You can find me at TechThing, TekThing.com or AVXL.com, the home theater podcast with Robert Herron. And we want to thank each and every one of you for participating in Twitch and being a part of it. And thank you so much. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Trout.
We'll see you next week on Twitch.